Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udiraye. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 8. The sons of Sagara meet Lord Kapiladev. Text 23. Tam Twam Maham Jnana Ganam Svabhava. Pradvastamaya Gunabheda Mohai. Sanandanaya Munibir Vibhavyam. Katam Vimudha Paribhavayami. Tam, that personality. Twam, unto you. Aham, I. Jnanaganam, your lordship who are concentrated knowledge. Subhava, by spiritual nature. Pradvasta, free from contamination. Maya guna, caused by the three modes of material nature. Heda Muhai, by exhibition of the bewilderment of differentiation. Sanandana Adyai, by such personalities as the four Kumaras. Sanat Kumara, Sanaka, Sanandana, and Sanatana. Munipi, by such great sages. Vibhavyam, worshipable. Katam, how? Vimudha, being fooled by the material nature. Paribhavayami, can I think of you? Translation, O my Lord, sages freed from the influence of the three modes of material nature, sages such as the four Kumaras, Sanat, Sanaka, Sanandana, and Sanatana, are able to think of you who are concentrated knowledge. But how can an ignorant person like me think of you? Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word svabhava refers to one's own spiritual nature or original constitutional position. When situated in this original position, the living entity is unaffected by the modes of material nature. Sagunan samati tyaitan pramabhuyaya kalpate. Bhagavad Gita 14:26. As soon as one is freed from the influence of the three modes of material nature, he is situated on the Brahman platform. Vivid examples of personalities thus situated are the four Kumaras and Narada. Such authorities can by nature understand the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But a conditioned soul not freed from the influence of material nature is unable to realize the Supreme. In Bhagavad Gita 2:45, therefore, Krishna advises Arjuna, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunyo Bhavarjuna. One must rise above the influence of the three modes of material nature. One who stays within the influence of the three material modes is unable to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Viditam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadahmayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sadvatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Pya Evacha Patitanam Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tam Tvam Aham Jnana Ghanam Subhava, Pradvastamaya Gunabheda Mohai, Sanandanaya Mudibhir Vibhavyam, Katam Vimudha Paribhavayami. O my Lord, sages freed from the influence of the three modes of material nature, such as the four Kumaras, Sanat, Sanaka, Sanandana, and Sanatana, are able to think of you who are concentrated knowledge. But how can an ignorant person like me think of you? And Srila Prabhupada first points to the word Svabhava, and says the word svabhava refers to one's own spiritual nature or original constitutional position. And this is a question that Sanatan Goswami asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he first met him. Who am I? In other words, what is my constitutional position? And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that you are an eternal servant of Krishna. Jivara Supahoy Krishnera Nityadas. Your constitutional position, he said, is a tatasta. It means that you're a marginal energy, and he went on to define what that means by quoting from the Vishnu Purana. First of all, he quoted Esha Desha Sitasyagnir Jyotsna Vishnaraniyata Parasya Brahmana Shaktis Tatedam Akilam Jagat. That the Supreme Being, like the sun, emanates unlimited energies. Sun is in one place, but its energies are all pervading within the universe. So similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in the source of all kinds of inconceivable energies. Then he gave more definition about the varieties of energies. Although there are unlimited varieties, ultimately, the Shastra describes how there's one energy, it's simply interchangeable. Then sometimes, as in the next verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quotes from the Vishnu Purana, he says there are three categories of energies, in which he says, the Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta Kshetra Gyakya Tatapara Avidya Karma Sangyangya Tritya Shakti Rishite. These Shaktis he names generally that there's the internal potency, the spiritual. And then there's the external potency, the material nature. And then there's the living entity who's subjected or has the power, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, to live within either energy, either the internal spiritual energy or the external energy. When the living entity lives within the external energy, then that living entity displays his attachment to matter and engagement in fruitive activities. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita describes this layering of energies when he says in the 7th chapter, Bhumir apu analo vayub kamano buddhi evacha ahankara ityam me binna prakriti ashtada. He names his separated material energies, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. And then he says, Aparayam itastvanyam prakritim virimi param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam daryatejaga. Besides these inferior energies, there's a superior energy, which is the living entity. And the living entities who are within matter are animating that lower energy. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu similarly quoted this verse from the Bhagavad Gita, that is, Aparayam itastanyam prakritim virimi param. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also describes how the soul is atomic. He's told that the Kesha Gra Shatabhagasha Shadam Shashadrishatmaka Jiva Sukhsva Surupo Yam Sankhyatito Hichitkana. The nature of the soul is he's Anu, or atomic, 1/10,000 size. He said the tip of a hair. If you take the tip of the hair, very tip of the hair, and divide it into 100 and get rid of the other 99 parts, and then do that again and get rid of the 99 parts, then you have the tiniest little particle, which is the living entity. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, because of his minuteness, he has the tendency to become overwhelmed by ignorance through association. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes on to explain that the living entity within the that's fallen into the material nature becomes covered by avidya, or ignorance. And he can't come out on his own. He needs outside help. And therefore he told Sanatan, Maya mugdha jivera nahi swata krishna gyan jivera krishne koilak Krishna Veda Puran. Maya mugna jivara nahi svata krishna gyan jivara kripoyak hoila krishna Veda Puran. Maya mugna jivara nahi svata krishna gyan jivara krishna koila krishna Veda Puran. Something wrong there. Huh? I can't hear ambient sound, sorry. In any case, what he said was that the living entity in ignorance, Maya Mugda Jivara Nahi Swata, it's not automatic, the living entity comes out of ignorance. It doesn't just suddenly discover one day that I'm not the body. But he needs outside help. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasadevas compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. Anarto pasanam sakshad bhakti yoga madhoksaje lokasya ajanato vidvams shakre satvata samhitam. The very purpose was to uplift those who had forgotten that they are spiritual and who do not know anything about the process of bhakti yoga, which is the only means to come out of that ignorance. And to describe how that is so, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told a story. Did you want to hear a story or not? Okay, so he said that one day there was a very poor man and he had no prospect in life. He was suffering because of his penury, and then he met an astrologer, an all-knowing astrologer, who looked at his chart and told him, actually, you're not poor, but you're rich. Now I have a question for you. How long does it take a poor man who's suffering because he doesn't have any money or prospect in life to become happy and change his mood in life when he finds out that he's actually rich? It's not a rhetorical question. I'm actually asking how long you think it might take. A nanosecond. Somebody back there said something kind of second, and Satyanarayan Prabhu said a nanosecond. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said similarly, a living entity in the material world who's hapless because he has no information about his actual nature. And this is something you can observe for yourself. If you walk around and ask people who they are, they'll give you all kinds of crazy answers. In fact, even the great philosophers of the world like Chavakmuni described how we're actually our body, and the purpose of life is to enjoy the senses as much as possible. And a lot of people bought into that philosophy. There's other religious systems that say that this body that you have now is the body you get, and that's who you are, actually. That's your identity. And after you die, there'll be a resurrection by the Lord who will come and resurrect you in this body and bring you back to heaven, where you'll be with the rest of your family. For some of you, that might not be great news. There are Astik and Nastik divisions of philosophy within India. Some of them describe as the Buddhists, the voidists, and so forth, Jains, how there is no soul at all. Anatmana means no Atma. We're a combination of various energies that have manifested consciousness. This is also something that modern scientists sometimes entertain as a possibility. And then there are those that describe the soul's position within the material world as being dependent on and moved by karma, and many ideas about what the self is. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very carefully says that in the story of the poor man, the astrologer tells him that not only do I know that your father was a rich man and he left you his wealth, I even know where it is. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu points out that knowing that you're spiritual, that you're a spirit soul and not your body, isn't enough. You also have to have a process. So in the parable he tells, the astrologer tells him where to dig for the treasure. And he advises him that don't dig on the southern side, because on the southern side you'll be bitten by wasps who represent the process of jnana, on the karma. On the western side, if you try to dig there, you'll be attacked by a ghost representing jnana. Then what side is left besides eastern? Northern side is a big black snake where you'll be swallowed up. Perhaps that's jnana. In any case, he indicates various insufficient philosophies, not only insufficient but wrong-headed philosophies that will simply cause you trouble and you won't get the treasure. Therefore, he says you have to dig on the eastern side. And he advocates then that you need to have abhideya, or a process. You have to have sambandhagyan, know who you are, and then you have to have a process through which to come to the point of realizing that you're the soul. Interestingly, although we are souls, let me rephrase it. Interestingly, though, although I am a soul, I may completely forget that I'm spiritual and live my life as if I'm a material entity, and worry throughout my whole life about losing the body, which is a foregone conclusion anyway. The body is already dwindling and will soon drop off. But just getting the information and understanding that there is a process is a happy day for any living entity in the world. And this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that the devotees, who are like physicians, they wander here and there, and they give this information to others that you're not your body, and they also give the process by which they can realize that. And in walking around various places and meeting people, experimenting with ways to introduce the information that Srila Prabhupada has made available in such a easily consumable form. Of course, we always look for ways in which to entice people or pique their interest and pique their interest in taking one of Prabhupada's books and reading it. And here's something that I discovered. Instant self-realization. Would you like to hear about how you can give somebody instant self-realization? Okay, three people said yes. And the rest of you, please cover your ears. And in a minute, when I'm done, I'll let you know and you can listen again. Are you ready? So, when I meet people, first of all, let me ask you a question. How do you feel when you meet somebody? Let's say you came out of your ashram today and they look at you and they say, you look tired. How do you feel? Thank you. Somebody's working with me over here. Tired, she said. And how about Panchagoda Prabhu? Somebody, of course, this would never happen. But if someone looked at you and said, boy, you look terrible. What happened? It's totally hypothetical because you always look good. But how would you feel? I know how I feel. It's just like, what happened? I better go back and look in the mirror and see what's going on. But here's what I discovered when I'm talking to people and I say to them, you look spiritual. There's a short circuit somewhere in their brain. And suddenly they remember for the first time after many lifetimes, hey, wait a minute, I am spiritual. You can watch as they process this information. And they'll, oh yeah, right, I'm spiritual. There's a hierarchy. Indriyani prayanyahura indriyibhya paramanaha manasastu prabhutir yobhute paratastu saha. The soul's at the top of the hierarchy and really overburdened by all the information coming in through the indriyas, being processed by the mind, which is conditioned by various modes of material nature. The intelligence then has become also polluted and is thinking of ways in which to deviously use material energy for sense gratification. But then suddenly, if you say to somebody, hey, you look spiritual, it bypasses that whole process and they suddenly think of themselves as spiritual. In one way, there's lots of sambandha jnana and information and a process through which one has to gradually come to realize the self. In another way, we are the self, the spiritual self. So it's not so far-fetched that one could simply introspect and say, hey, wait a minute, I've been faked out here. In fact, in the word for word, it says vimudha, being fooled by the material energy. And Prabhupada elsewhere says, this whole material world is a colossal hoax. I mean, have you ever been engaged in some kind of deal somewhere and someone walks up to you and says it's a colossal hoax and then you go, oh. And suddenly, you're not so enthusiastic about it anymore, are you? They have credible information that it's a colossal hoax. And in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says as much. He says a common person who introspects and takes a close look at the senses that he or she is carrying around and utilizing and notices that he or she is the witness of these senses and that they're acting, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, independently of the soul, and who also observes that there's a free flow of intelligence that's coming into one's mental system as if there's a fatherly figure there giving help. Such a person can come to notice that actually I'm not my body. And Prabhupada again says this can be done by even a common person. So it's not so far away and it's not so far-fetched. Unfortunately, however, there's unlimited supply of misinformation, and also, even when there is good information, there's a reluctance to accept it because of being conditioned by the modes of material nature and not really wanting to know that I'm the spirit soul and not the body. Devamrita Swami calls this mass consensual trance. Everyone maintains the farce that I'm my body, you're your body, we're one family. Even Hiranyakashipu knew this wasn't true when he tried to solace his family after the death of Hiranyaka. He told him, he said, look, this family thing is just like people getting together in a hotel or a restaurant, having a drink together, root beer preferably, and then they all walk off in different directions, and they never see each other again. I see people on the airplane all the time, blah, blah, blah. They're talking to each other about their dog and their home and everything like that. And then when the plane lands, they get up and go their different ways. So Vedic wisdom says that's what's happening in all these family units, societal units, countries, sports teams. It's all a bunch of nonsense based on the bodily conception of life. Furthermore, the greatest farce, and I'll stop after this for reflections, is pointed out when Hiranyakashipu tells a story about the great king who has fought his last battle. Suyagya, he falls down on the battlefield, biting his lip to show his prowess. His limbs are smashed. And his wives come out and clutch his body, and they're wailing into the evening air. And then Yamaraj comes as a little boy and says, why are you crying? And they say, our husband is gone. He said, what are you talking about, gone? He's right there. He has the same, see, the eyes are there, the nose is there, the hands are there. How can you say gone? They say, you don't understand. And then he says, no, you don't understand. You never saw your father, your husband, the king. You're interacting with the body. So the primary understanding of spiritual life, which remarkably is stated by Krishna in a most unusual circumstance, you'll notice in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, when at Kurukshetra, all of the family members come together and the residents of Vrindavan come to see Krishna. And the sages are there listening to Krishna. And what philosophy does he speak to the greatest sages on the planet at a momentous time? Yasyatma buddhi kunapetri datuke sodhi kalatradichu bhoma iditi. Yet tirta buddhi salilena karichit janeshu abhigeshu sa eva gokara. He says that if you think you're your body, you have an intelligence of an animal. And the sages there at Kurukshetra said, this is the most amazing thing we've ever heard in our lives. Don't they? They say this is the most amazing thing. Comes right out of the lips of Krishna at a momentous time with the greatest sages on the planet. And this is what he speaks. That if you're attached to your homelands, you think it's worshipable, if you think this body is yours, if you go to a holy place and miss the opportunity to hear from holy people, then you're like an animal. Someone asked me the other day, why cow? Say eva gokura. Because cows are worshipable. Why would Krishna say you're like a cow? And the reason is because cows, Prabhupada said, if they give birth to a calf that's stillborn, that's dead, the gwalar will take the dead calf and put it before the cow, and the cow will lick the body of the dead calf and still give milk, because it can't tell the difference if it's alive or dead. So if someone can't tell the difference between the body and the soul, he's dead. I lied. I want to make one more point before I take reflections, and that is, in the purport, Prabhupada then goes on to say, and this is part of the verse, and that is that great souls, the process of self-realization is dependent on great souls. Vivid examples of personalities thus situated are the four Kumaras in Narada. Such authorities can by nature understand the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Implication here is that, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also mentions in his teachings to Sanatana Goswami, that in order to understand the self, one must take shelter of great souls and follow in their footsteps. And I'll say more about that in the course of more conversation that we have now. So now we'll take reflections. That's anything that you heard from the verse that you want to me to expand upon. Or if you have something you heard from the monologue that you want to reflect back. We'll start with that because questions are like a hook and they can drag things way off into the Jamuna. So can we reflect a few times? We'll get this mic to you in 7 seconds or less, or your money back from this class. Reflect, please. Yes?
You said there was a colossal hoax.
Your prophet said the whole material world is going on as a colossal hoax.
Where does that term come from? What does that mean?
Does somebody have a dictionary handy? Please, somebody look up the two words. Prabhu? Give him the microphone, he's in the back. We'll find out the etymology, but the fact is colossal means something huge. I mean, it's on a really big scale. And a hoax means it's a scam. It's a Ponzi scheme. Okay, go ahead.
It was only for the dictionary.
What?
It was for the dictionary, but you said it.
Yeah, could you look it up, please? Oh. Thank you.
Hoax means something.
H-O-A-X, hoax.
Something intended to deceive, deliberate, trickery, intended to gain an advantage.
Yeah, so the material nature definitely has an advantage over us, because Krishna says, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quotes this, Daivihiyesha guna mayi mama maya duratyaya mameviye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. It's my divine nature, you can't overcome it, unless you surrender. Okay, next word.
Colossal. So great in size, force, or extent as to elicit awe.
Yes, the biggest scam of all time. Anyway, it's huge. It's all pervading. And in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned that even the demigods are bewildered by this combination of three modes of material nature. They can't tell what's real, what's not real. It's very difficult to understand. Gajendra says this in his prayers, that he says that the world's very difficult to understand. And therefore, we find that people aren't sure what they're supposed to do with it, with this world, when they come into it. Have you noticed that? Everyone has a different idea about what to do with the world and how to interact with the world. And Gajendra goes on to say that because of that, we're not sure if we're supposed to stay in the world and cooperate to the best and tolerate the best we can, or whether we're supposed to give up the world. Those are two general choices that he mentions. Which conclusion do you think he comes to? Chandra? Give it up, yes. And the reason he says so, he said, because although I can't understand whether to give it up or not give it up, all the great sages have said you should give it up. And therefore, we'll take their word for it. And Krishna says much the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita. Narupamasyeha tatopalabhyate nanto nacharyarnacha sampratishtam ashvatamenam savarudamulam masanga shastrena jitena chitva. He says, the material world's difficult to figure out. You don't know what the form of it is because we don't have the perspective to see it. And you don't know where it begins, where it ends. You don't know what your position in it is. He says, but you should cut down the strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. And then parimargitavyam, you should make a journey back to that original person from whom it has emanated. So far the reflection was about the colossal hopes. Anything else? Not anything else. What else do you have? Reflections? Yes?
I quite
We need the microphone over here. Anything you say before you get the microphone doesn't count. It's coming.
Thank you for your ever inspiring classes, Guru. I quite like the thing, the point that you made, that when we see somebody, what do we say? So you said, if you say, are you tired? Then how do they feel that you feel tired? I'm not going to share my, what that made me think, or not?
I don't see who could stop you.
So that just made me feel that the power of words are so powerful. I mean, even amongst devotees, what we say to each other, it could be something positive, it could be something negative. So it could uplift somebody's spiritual life and it could really pull them down. And likewise, in preaching, obviously. But then I did get, when you say that, are you spiritual, they might think, you're a weirdo. So what do you do about that?
No, I didn't say, are you spiritual? I said, you look spiritual.
Yes, you look spiritual.
Yeah.
So they might say, you look so weird. So
they might say what? People might say a lot of stuff. You never know what's going to happen when you go in public. That's the excitement of the whole thing. That's why it's a good idea to go out and preach, as people say all kinds of stuff. But usually, and it's interesting, the kinds of aberrations that we're imagining that people are going to say or do never happen, or they happen very little. It's mostly in my mind that I think there's going to be this or that objection. But there's generally, people appreciate it when you appreciate them. And if you speak to the soul sincerely and genuinely, people feel it. And really, if you're cultivating a spiritual knowledge and you're feeling the power of bhakti, Vasudevi, Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga, Prayojita, Janaya Yashavairagyam, Jnanam Chariyat Haitukam, you have detachment, you have knowledge. When you speak to people, there's a really good chance that you can speak compassionately and not be condescending and actually commune with them for a few minutes. And it's something that they'll feel very deeply. If you're speaking from the soul because you're cultivating that knowledge and you speak to the soul, and your point about the importance of the words we speak to others and ourselves is well taken. I mean, this is one of the basic foundational points of practice in Krishna consciousness. As Rupa Goswami begins the most important summary of bhakti, vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, he says, you know, control your speech. Krishna mentions in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that there are austerities of speech that one must follow. Speaking truthfully, beneficially, avoiding speech that offends, regularly reciting the Vedas. And similarly, the Padma Purana, Atashi Krishna Madina Bhaved Grayam Indriye Seva Mukhi Jiva Do Swayameva Spurantyada. Yoga begins with the tongue. I've always found that if you create an environment in any devotional community or any community whatsoever, and you encourage people, catch them doing something right and encourage them, they tend to respond positively. Have you found that? Or do you like to be criticized in front of others? Let's have a few more reflections. Chandra Prabhu, please get them the mic in 7 seconds or less. Raise your hand so they know where you are. Use teamwork if possible.
Thank you, Francis. You mentioned we should take shelter of great souls. So therefore, I was given today is the disappearance of Bukharo Goswami Kashishwar Pandit. Sorry for joining us, but I think you have the kindness to repeat your names a few times and say a few things about these great souls.
It's the disappearance day of Bukharo Goswami and
Kashishwar
Pandit. No, but I would like you to say a few words.
Please.
No, since on your mind, please go ahead. Let's share, because I don't have anything readily available on my mind.
The only thing I can think of is Bukharo Goswami did his bhajan in a cave, hence his name, Bukharo. And his samadhi is at the Radhakamadhara temple.
He did his bhajan in a cave. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, his name is Bukharo, another name, if I'm not mistaken, that word word can also be in a cave.
Wow. Yeah, I've been in some of those caves. The Gufa. You go in there and it's very quiet. There's no no internet connection down there. It's awe-inspiring to see the lengths to which the great souls will go to focus on their bhajan. Bhugarbha Goswami, his name means that he did his bhajan in a cave. And this should be emulated, this taking time to focus. Twayamba Satvadami Samadhi Naveshita Chetasaike Twatparapotena Mahakritena Kurvanti Govatsa Padambhavanam Twayambujakshak Kila Satvadami Samadhi Naveshita Chetasaike. The demigods praying to Lord Krishna within the womb said that this is the purpose of life, is to samadhi navesha to chaita saike. You just focus your mind in one place on Krishna. And he says that the great souls, as this relates to the purport today, because he summarily just mentions the four kumaras, and you're mentioning great souls are in our midst, in our line of disciplic succession, remembering them in their modes of worship. Kritena. He said that there's a method through which these great souls take, and this becomes a boat. Twatpada potena mahatkritena. Their method of worship becomes a boat for us. If we observe what is the primary method of worship of these great souls, then, and we follow it, then Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, and this is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, obviously, that when you approach it, then the ocean of material existence shrinks to the size of the water contained within the hoofprint of a calf. Interestingly, in the Payavrata vows that Aditi performed on the advice of her husband Kashyapa, there was pages and pages of details about how to perform the vrat. And Prabhupada says, if you're following the ISKCON system, don't worry, you're already doing all these things. It's already covered. So there's a way in which we take inspiration from these great souls who did their bhajan in caves and dedicated their lives to helping others focus on Radha and Krishna through establishing temples and writing literatures. If we follow in their footsteps to the best of our ability, then we are on the path of the saints. This is the most efficacious way in which to come to the point of self-realization. Bejare munio tagre bhagavatamanokshajam satvam bishuram shemaya kalpanteyi inutaniha. Previously, all the great souls, like Bhugarbha, Goswami, that they worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead exclusively in order to become free from the influence of the three modes of material nature, as is mentioned in this verse. And anyone who follows in the footsteps of those sages, even if they're not great sages themselves, kalpante yenutaniha, they become eligible to also attain the same result. So your remembrance of these great souls on this day, and that the spirit of it is very, it's inspiring. We can remember them and we can think, let me follow in their footsteps. Thank you. More reflections? Let me just see if there's any. I'm scanning. Nothing from the left side. One more here. I'll come back to you. Prabhu?
Hi, sir. So, I took my spiritual vow at Bhaktivedanta Manor, and we were taught.
You did what at Bhaktivedanta Manor?
I put my spiritual path in others and
started. Oh, you started your spiritual path at Bhaktivedanta Manor.
So, I started with Dwayne Prabhu was Baba's disciple.
Who?
Don't you remember?
Yes.
So, as we joined the Bhakti program, we go out distributing the books right from the first day.
Yes.
So, I was very apprehensive and I asked him, what do I say? Except, and you know, they said, you go out and you hand it up and say, please make one. This is all about the focus or the information about you. And when you say it's all about you, have a big smile and be very positive. And we found that was very clear.
That was effective.
Yes, very effective.
Well, this is confirmed by Shukadeva Goswami, because in the 10th canto, 14th chapter, he says the most interesting subject matter in the universe to every living entity is his or her own self. Then he goes on to say, Atmanam akilatmanam. Imagine if you're so interested in yourself, how interested you'll be in the self of yourself. Therefore, this is following up in the pastime of Krishna stealing the cows and boys. But yes, that's really nice, Prabhu, that you brought that up, because there's a spirit to that we remember how devotees, they tax their brains to think of ways in which to connect with people and give them an opportunity to take to spiritual knowledge. It's endlessly edifying to go through that process. One grows oneself by thinking of how to present to others, and oftentimes in the course of presenting Krishna consciousness here, there, and everywhere to the proverbial man on the street, we find that many people are more enthusiastic about spiritual life than perhaps we are. That's an inspiration, when you see the enthusiasm people have to take it. And on the other side, we might see somebody have you ever had a door slammed in your face? Anyone? One person only? Two? Come on, Chandra. It's so funny. I mean, it's one of the funniest things that can ever happen. People dread it, but I think it's hilarious. I mean, you knock, 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 knock. They open the door, and they look, and within half a second, they bang. And I'm thinking, how'd you figure that out so fast that you're going to close the door? I mean, what's in your mind? It's really fascinating how that can take place. You notice things like human psychology, and one might then detect in oneself the tendency to reject out of hand Krishna consciousness or certain processes and so forth. It's a reflection of ourselves. Okay. If there's nothing from this side, Mataji's ready to go and she has good questions. Because we still have 3 minutes left.
There's so many wonderful brains for me, but this Kali Yuga Sid-like brain, I can't remember, but one thing, I do remember you said about how tiny the soul is, which we hear all the time, and then you brought that up also in the class, about the mysteriality of the soul, it's significant and tininess, but at the same time,
I would like to expand on the word minusculality. I've never heard that before. That's pretty good. How do you feel about your minusculality? I mean, there's masculinity and all kinds of T's, but how do you feel about your minusculality? That's an interesting point. I mean, there are philosophies in which people try to extrapolate and say, no, actually, you are God, you're all-pervading, but that's something that in the prayers personified Vedas, you'll find that that's an amazing chapter, by the way. I mean, you know better than I do, but the fact is, you know, after so much Leela, if you hear the prayers personified Vedas, they cover everything. All these weird, bogus philosophies that try to turn the soul into something he's not. And one of the simple arguments, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again quotes from this, when he's speaking to Sanatana Goswami, he says, actually, you are minuscule. Live with it. Get over the fact you're not God. And he said, if you were God, if you were all-pervading, and you weren't tiny, you wouldn't be controlled by God's energy. That's pretty simple. I met one guy, I was at the Montreal Rathayatra. I was standing behind the book booth, and he came over, and he said, you know, this whole thing's a mental construct, what you guys are doing. And He was an avid atheist, and I said, yeah, but you still have to die, you know that, right? And he got really he got really upset. I mean, not so much at me, just with the existential situation of the world and his part in it. It's sort of a stark realization that I'm not in control, and death tends to make us realize our minusculity. I've seen it in people who are intellectuals and who spend their life. I had relatives, or actually my mother and father spend their life in academics, and they had talk about mental constructs, ways in which to see the world and feel kind of safety in these mental constructs. But I saw it very directly, especially in my mother when she was leaving the world, how she just dropped it. Because when impending death is coming, there's a kind of separation, if you have time to look at it even before you actually have to leave the body. There's a way in which you start to really analyze, you know, what just happened here. I just blew through 80, 90 years, and I never really stopped to think about my minusculity and what's my part in the universe and so forth. One can do that preemptively, and one should do that preemptively. Take time to realize one's minusculity. See, it's a thing now. And we might even make like a bumper sticker or something. Celebrate minusculity. That could be a thing, right? So the soul who does celebrate it and who says, Krishna, I'm yours. I'm completely helpless. Please give me your shelter. This is the infallible means of attaining communion with the Supreme Personality of God. It's simply the sincere surrender. And therefore, in ending the class, Jiva Goswami says in one of his commentaries in the Bhagavatam that the devotees of the Lord are constantly meditating on the Lord's promise within the Bhagavad Gita, in which he says, Sarva dharman parityaja mame kam sharanam braja aham tvang sarva papebhyo mukshai shamim. They base their whole life on this idea that I'm simply dependent on Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hare Krishna, Ram Roy. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for all that you do, Panchagoda Prabhu, and all the devotees here in Vrindavan. When we were at Govardhan, I mean, I heard this on Indra's tapes before, you know, at the Vrindavan Junction, where they're calling you to get in the rickshaw. They're going, Vrindavan, 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 Vrindavan. When we were driving past one of those guys the other day, he was yelling out, Vrindavan, Vrindavan, Vrindavan. And I was thinking how lucky we all are to be here in Vrindavan. Thank you very much. I have a little treat for all of you after this class that I'm going to hand out. There's a variety of treats, just as out of gratitude and out of love. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpadurusha kripa sindabhe vacha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Gopremanande Haribo.